Welcome everyone to episode 50 of the Average Ontario Anglers Fishing Podcast. I don't think we've ever thought that we would get to 50, right, Andrew?
I've been working hard not to say that this year, and you just ruined it. You're like, well, would you ever believe we got to 50? Why don't you go listen to episodes 3, 7, 14, 15, 32, and listen to us say it on all those beginning of episodes, because the answer is the same. I did not think we'd get this far.
It's crazy, though. 50 episodes, and this episode actually today is all about lures that even a weirdo can use. And by weirdo, I mean, if you don't have any skills in fishing, we're going to talk about some of the lures that literally a complete, I don't want to say loser. These are lures for losers, okay, guys? And girls.
Hey, I use most of them, Jesse. Yeah.
We're going to talk about a bunch of baits that are really good on Ontario for kind of the spring. I know it's a bit early, but I know a lot of people that don't fish steelhead or go ice fishing, they're just waiting for, you know, open water season in May for pike season and maybe bass season coming up and walleye season. So we're going to talk about some of our favorite lures that are just dead easy to use and they catch fish. So either for yourself or if you're taking someone with you, these are some of the baits that you're going to want to have in your tackle box. But before we get into that, we have, as tradition states, an interesting fishing fact. And to handle that for us, we have the man with the mustache and the beard, Andrew.
I want to talk about fish. We often talk to them about them before, and Jesse will say, like, oh, you know, steelhead, they aren't as smart as we think, or, you know, pike, they're pretty dumb. And in general, we like to think of fish as being pretty stupid themselves. I mean, that's why these stupid baits work, right, Jesse?
Yeah.
I was doing some research into, like, how smart are fish? How well can they memorize things? How can they recognize dangers? How well are they at communicating that, perhaps, to other fish? So we always, like, oftentimes for years, science thought of fish as purely instinctive creatures. Like, they wouldn't have thought, they just, oh, the reaction, or I feel this way, I go do this, I do this. But they're finding more and more evidence that suggests that their cognitive abilities are actually a lot more than they originally thought. So there's a few different examples of, for instance, like, first, memory, fish memory. I'm sure you've heard of, you know, people saying, I got the memory of a goldfish.
Yep.
And that for years it was like, oh, every 5 seconds or 7 seconds is they lose their memory. That's not the case. The cichlid, the African cichlid, very common species to have in aquariums. They have a spatial memory that allows them to memorize where food is normally so that they can navigate wherever they have to go. And I'm not talking about within their tank, they know to go to the top. I mean, like, in the wild, they know where they need to go, how they have to travel in order to get to that food safely, and where that food is going to be. They learn that, they memorize it, and it's not just days or weeks, but even months. These little fish can remember it for that long-term memory. Even goldfish, they have demonstrated the ability to remember associative tasks. So learning how to press a lever so that food gets dispensed. And they'll memorize that. So the next time they see that, they will go and they'll press that lever knowing that they're going to get food. Those are goldfish, the fish that we say have the worst memory of all.
Wow.
Now, about learning, so that's like memory. There's a couple examples of, like, even small fish, their ability to memorize, not complex, but more than what we thought, actions or routes or areas, and be able to hold that in their memory. Now, their ability to learn, as fish grow, I'm sure, like us, when you're growing up, you learn pretty quick. No, don't put your hand on the hot stove. Fish do the same thing. So if they're learning to avoid predators, recognize fellow fish that aren't a threat, even the ability to swim through mazes, they've been able to have that. But they can learn much like other invertebrates that we have around us. One, I don't know if you ever watched on Blue Planet, there's called a wrasse, a cleaner wrasse. And these are these little, like, striped fish, and they go and they'll swim right up to these predator fish and swim right into their mouth and start pecking away at stuff. And they start cleaning all the little parasites off the fish's skin, but they swim right into the mouths of these other fish, which you'd think that's just a death wish. But that's because these fish have learned, recognize not only different species of fish, but because some of them will look quite similar, but they can even recognize they believe that they can even recognize individual fish themselves. And to be able to differentiate them between another one, so know how to clean that specific fish, where he perhaps doesn't like being cleaned or where he prefers it. So because they have to minimize the risk of, you know, them being eaten, which clearly they're swimming around in other fish's mouths. what really sparked my interest was, could fish communicate? So there's one, it's called the fathead minnow. So when you're doing some scientific testing, when exposed to chemical alarm cues released by injured fish, they have a weird word here. I'm not going to read it. It just means fish of that species. So when one gets injured, it releases these chemical alarms, like pheromones, essentially. And then other fish will display heightened anti-predator behaviors and subsequently release alarm cues themselves. So let's say one gets injured, the fish beside it is like, hey, all of a sudden I'm picking up on this pheromone, whatever's in the water, someone's in danger, someone was injured, alarm starts going off, and it's going to change its behavior to be more defensive, to perhaps avoid that area. And then it also starts, without being injured itself, starts sending out that same pheromone as a warning to other fish of that same species. So far, we've kind of talked about like small, you know, either bait fish or primarily stuff you'd find in aquariums. And you're like, okay, so how does that help us? Well, I did more research to see, is there any evidence that suggests that our game fish are doing the same thing? Now, I don't know about you, Jesse. Have you ever been fishing and let's say you're on a school of bass or a school of perch and just hitting them one after the other, having a great time? But then, either that later that day or just an hour later, whatever you're using doesn't work. It stops working for whatever reason.
Yep.
But then someone else comes over, starts using something different, slightly different presentation, and they start catching just like before. Have you ever experienced that?
100%. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, take a drink. I mean, I have. Not as much as I'd like. I rarely get onto those, you know, hot bite times. But I have experienced that myself as well. So game fish like bass, walleye, and perch, they don't communicate like us. You know, they're not going to be like, oh, hello, fellow bass. Don't go over there. There is a hook on that bait. Like, they can't speak that way, obviously. But they can signal danger to each other. They're nonverbal, obviously. And they rely heavily on their instincts and sensory perception. What the scientists are saying is, if one fish detects a potential threat, so let's say it's a predator or an artificial bait, something that it may have encountered, let's say it got hooked before and it says, I did not have a good experience with that, and it sees it again, that specific fish will start to exhibit certain behaviors that the other fish in that area will look at saying, hey, he's exhibiting warning signs. He's becoming defensive. That other fish is acting weird now because this has shown up. So even without that original fish who had that bad experience, the other fish are noticing, you know, without sending a pheromone out, the other fish are just noticing its change of behavior itself because it remembers, hey, that was a bad time when I bit that last. So other fish, they can pick up on that. Because you think of it, they have to do so. They're always looking out for each other. Fish travel in schools oftentimes, like bait fish especially, for the purpose of protection. So that not only, you know, strength in numbers, but if one it gets eaten or if one notices danger, the others can help react or are aided in their reaction time to avoid it. They also, some fish, and primarily perch I've heard, they will release chemical signals, which are pheromones, when they're stressed or alarmed. So these pheromones can alert nearby fish to potential dangers and cause them to become more cautious or even avoid the area altogether. They may not be able to warn each other not to eat like specific baits or lures, like, hey, that right there, don't eat that. But they can learn to associate certain smells, tastes, or appearances, their own danger, or through observation of other fish. So if one fish, like I said, has that negative experience on a, you know, X branded bait that has this odor, this scent to it, and then other fish are recognizing that it's that fish is avoiding that scent because it's exhibiting dangerous, you know, danger signs to it, that could cause those other fish in the area to avoid it all the same themselves. So I just thought it was interesting that, you know, we always think of them as kind of stupid or don't have the ability. But maybe all these years when we've been catching like the small guy, Jesse, and we say, go tell your mama, go get your big brother and have him bite next. Maybe they're understanding us and we shouldn't be giving them the tip on, hey, don't spread anything at all and then release it.
Yeah.
You didn't see anything.
Yeah. That's actually interesting because it's a good excuse if you're terrible at fishing, like me. You can just be like, you know what? The fish are communicating. They're learning. They're speaking down there, man. Drop in that sunfish that you caught. He's telling everyone that the alarm's going off. Code red.
But that does make sense, though, because you have like lures and stuff where they were, you know, they're big, they hit tournaments and guys are slamming on fish. But then 5 years later, when they become more popular and more widespread, they stop producing as well.
Yeah, for sure. And you've seen that over the years, lots of popular lures that were like a mainstay, not as popular anymore on some of the bigger lakes because the fish just get hammered by them. Like some of the more popular lakes down in the States, remember when the chatterbait came out, guys were winning almost every tournament on it. Now you go down there and they're like, yeah, sometimes the fish don't, they won't even touch it. They know, they know that you can feel that vibration, that exact vibration. They know the, what that lure looks like and they won't touch it. So that's definitely interesting.
Yeah. And it doesn't even have to be every fish had to have been caught in it for them to avoid it. It could just be observation. I didn't have to put a fork in an outlet to know it wasn't good. I saw my brother do it and realized I'm not going to do that myself.
Good old Jeremy.
I use my brother as a good example for, I use my brother as an example to avoid lots of things in life. So thanks, Jeremy.
We should have him on the podcast one of these days.
I would love.
Can get him to tell some embarrassing stories about you, Andrew, as a child.
Yeah, but he knows I have way worse ones of him, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah, if you guys are interested in having Andrew's brother on the podcast with some interesting fishing stories, maybe it could just be an episode where we go through some of our childhood stories of fishing. Let us know in the comments on our Instagram. Send us a message, send us an email, send us a message on Patreon if you're following us on there too, and we'll definitely get it set up. So this week's giveaway partner is actually one of our favorite local brands. Oh, we love you all. We love all you guys and girls, but Sheldon's one of our favorites. Jacked Up Jigs. Sheldon from Jacked Up Jigs. We met him last year at CanCast. Remember that, Andrew?
I do.
I was looking everywhere for Sheldon. He's messaging me on Instagram. He's like, find me at CanCast. I walked by his, there's so much stuff at CanCast. It's insane. I walked by his booth like four times. I was like, I can't find this guy. He was literally waving at me. He's like, I'm right here. So we eventually found him. He makes some amazing, amazing stuff. And we say that about all these, you know, local bait makers and people that make stuff in the community. But believe me, Sheldon makes some absolutely fantastic stuff. We're going to kind of get into a few of the stuff that he makes and kind of meld it into this episode as well, because he makes a lot of lures that are really great, simple, straight retrieve baits. He also makes a lot of stuff that require technique, but we're not going to talk about that today. But anyway, Sheldon from Jacked Up Jigs, he's actually generously donated $100 of value of stuff from his website. And that's absolutely amazing. And again, if you would like to enter these giveaways, you have to be a Patreon member. And for as little as $2 a month to help support the show costs, which there are costs that happen with the show, right? You get entered automatically into every giveaway. So your odds are actually pretty good. Supporting the show will actually help support getting more lures in your box, potentially.
I think what you need to do is have Sarah McLachlan, you know, play in the background. In the arms of an angel. For just $2 a month, you can help support the Average Ontario Anglers podcast.
Yeah. Our budget's pretty low. We can't hire Sarah McLachlan. Although she's Canadian, maybe. So anyway, we're going to talk about a little bit about that, but we would like to thank Sheldon for sponsoring the giveaway for this episode. We do really appreciate everyone that does that because it helps us get some cool baits into the hands of our Patreon members as well. And it also helps them out because I know a lot of you probably haven't heard of Sheldon from Jacked Up Jigs. So definitely check out the link below. It'll take you right to his website and his Instagram. Definitely check it out. Don't take our word for it. He makes really legit stuff. So I thought this episode, Andrew, we could kind of talk about baits that are just super easy to use. And I don't want to sound like if you use these baits, you're dumb, because that's not necessarily true.
It is in my case.
But these are just baits that are really easy. You know, though, sometimes you have one of those days, right? When you're just like, you know what? I'm not feeling it. I'm tired. You know, I just want to chuck something, you know, chuck and wind, right? Just cast it out and reel it in. And a lot of those baits we're going to talk about today. And we're going to kind of talk about some of the Jacked Up Jigs baits that he has as well that are going to fit right into this perfectly. It's the perfect episode that I've created, Andrew. So I thought we could start off with a classic. What's like one of the classic lures that you just always think of that everyone has in their tackle box?
I think I know where you're going with this. So I pulled out my most classic I have. Am I onto something here?
Yep, a spinner.
Oh, yeah.
Andrew's actually holding like a spinner from like the 1910s.
For the majority of our audio listeners, I just held up a visual cue of a spinner. The research I did in this one, this is actually from the very late 1800s. It's an unweighted spinner with a little turkey feather on the back of it. So
that's cool. But that just goes to show you that people have been using spinners for a long time. Like guys were using them back in the 1800s. We're still using them today. And I think it's one of those baits that a lot of people use, But I think a lot of anglers just getting into the sport, they may not think that a spinner is something that, you know, it's not modern. It's, you know, it won't catch fish anymore. That is the opposite of true. Spinners have been catching fish for the last century, pretty much. And they will continue to catch fish just because of how cool they are. So when it comes to spinners, the first spinner that pops into my head when I think of any spinner is a MEPS spinner. Everyone probably knows and can identify a MEPS spinner. And there's a lot of different MEPS spinners that, you know, that are popular. I know Andrew was talking about the Comet.
Yeah.
I know we have the Comet. We have the MEPS Black Fury. We have the Aglia, Long. They have all kinds of different spinners. And my overall favorite, although I have done very well in the Aglia and Aglia Long, my overall favorite has to be the MEPS Black Fury. Now, if you've never seen a Black Fury, it has a black blade, obviously, but usually they have either one of two colors. It's either chartreuse dots on it or bright orange. Now, I like the size 4, size 3, 4, 5, all good for various species. And the cool thing about them is they have the iconic gold hook on the bottom. Oftentimes, too, you can get them with squirrel tail. Oftentimes, people think I know a lot of people say, oh, you got to get the one with the dress treble. That'll help you catch more fish. And I know a lot of other people say, oh, you don't need that. So I've kind of gone back and forth. I don't see a huge difference myself, but I do like the ones with the big, you know, bushy squirrel tail in the end. They look pretty sick, but it depends really what I'm fishing for.
And if you are using the Comet, you can actually slide the weight up on the bottom and swap out your hook. So if you're fishing and you're like, hey, you know what? Let's see if it does make a difference. You can either use the old classic minnow tip treble from back in the day, or you can throw on the squirrel treble, or you can put on a bear one, or you can put on whatever you want.
Yeah, they all work great. I remember looking in my dad's tackle box back in the day, and he had a few Black Furies in his tackle box. He also had a Comet with one of those minnows on it as well, the minnow trailer.
Or you attach a whole Comet to another Comet, and it's like tandem.
Double Comet. But spinners are such a great bait for like any species. Like I think that of all the species that we fish for in Ontario, I don't think there's one that you can't catch with a spinner. You have to think spinners catch anything from stream trout, panfish, largemouth and smallmouth, walleye, pike love them. Musky bucktails are basically big spinners. They're probably one of the most popular musky lures of all time. I've caught almost every species that I could, you know, possibly fish for in Ontario on a spinner. I really think that for anyone getting into the sport, or if you're fishing, say, with a child or an elderly person or someone just getting into the sport and they don't really know how to fish, it's one of those baits that you can literally just cast it out and just reel it in, and fish go nuts for it. For whatever reason, the vibration, the flash, whatever it is, fish just destroy it. It's one of those baits that if someone told me, is like, okay, you got to fish this Algonquin Lake and you can only bring one lure, it would probably be a MEPS spinner. Probably. Like a number 3, maybe a number 4. And I would have full confidence. I'd be like, yeah, no problem. Let's slay. You know, like you'd be totally fine. And I'd say, me and Andrew are actually talking about this a bit earlier because we were talking about steelhead fishing because that's the season right now, right? Everyone's steelhead fishing. Steelhead fishing with spinners is absolutely fun. It's insane. The grab, the fish comes up and smacks that spinner and almost pulls the rod out of your hand. It's so exciting. And I know Andrew caught a pretty good steelhead a little ways back on a spinner. Tell us about that.
I was actually going for some stream. It was kind of later in the run. I was going for some stream trout. I was going for some brown trout. I saw a couple nice looking like chrome steelhead still in the creek. And I was like, man, I expected them all to be, you know, dark or gone. Yeah. But I cast out, I was using a number, I believe it was a number 0 Panther Martin. Which I love the Panta Martin spinners, like for trout. It's my go-to. And just a tiny little spinner. I landed this thing. I had to be careful not to bend up the hook because, I was going for a stream trout, not a steelhead. Yeah. But that turned out to be like the best looking steelhead I've ever caught. Like it was chrome. And again, that was on the spinner.
And I think a lot of people think that you can't chuck spinners or spoons for steelhead until like, you know, the season opens or when the water's a bit warmer. I've caught them right after ice out. No problem. So don't worry. It's not every day that they're going to slam spinners in hardware, but when you find one of those days to do it, I highly, highly recommend it. It is so much fun. Sometimes these fish, they just see too much of the same thing. They see like, you know, row bag, row bag, row bag, and then pink worm, and then bead, 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 bead. No, they see everything. And you could just be that angler that comes up after these fish have seen everything and you cause them to react. It's like bass fishing when we always say, cause a reaction bite, cause them to react to the bite. A little, you know, a natural presentation going past their face. It may look delicious, it may look tasty, but if they're not in the mood to actually eat, that's not going to do anything for them. But if you whip a spinner past their face and cause them to react to it, that's out of their control. Their natural instinct is to grab that thing that's swinging in front of their face. So you can oftentimes catch fish that generally wouldn't bite anything else. Does that happen all the time? Not all the time, but when you can make it happen, it is so fun. We can't talk about spinners without talking about spoons. That they go like together, like they're totally opposite lures. They do opposite things, but we always kind of put them together like spinners and spoons, right?
They go in the same tackle tray for me.
Yes, exactly. So I thought we could talk about two basic techniques for spoons that are just cast and retrieve. So the first one would be if I was fishing for any species, but it's springtime. So my mind right now is really, I'm thinking about pike. After, you know, a few weeks ago, we talked about that giant pike that I caught. I'm just like, oh, I want to go for pike this year. I love pike fishing. Me and Andrew both really like it. I know it's one of those species that down where we are anyway, not a lot of people actually target pike. It's usually, yeah. Oh, it's bass or it's walleye. But like
a lot of guys hate pike.
Yeah, they hate them. Like, oh, I caught a pike. They're like, oh, stupid pike. No, like we like catching them, especially when they get girthy. And one of the best lures for pike is a spoon. It's been like that for, I was going to say hundreds of years, but like it's been like that for decades and decades, literally hundreds of years, probably. Yeah. Andrew knows the history. But when it comes to spoons, if you're fishing with someone that, again, not a lot of experience, or, you know, maybe they only get out once in a while, it's hard to beat just cast and retrieve a spoon. The one I have in my hand, we talk about this whenever we talk about spoons, Len Thompson, 5 of Diamonds. This here is a number two. The number two, it's about 3/4 of an ounce. This lure you can cast literally into orbit. It's just like you cast, like, I know when you're fishing with someone that maybe doesn't have as much experience or fishes a lot, oftentimes casting is one of the harder things you have to get down. And the last thing you want to do is hand them some lightweight, non-air resistant lure that's just going to like be terrible to cast. I want to give them something that's like a rocket. Be like, here, cast this. And it flies, you know, like as far as they can cast it in open water. So the Len Thompson's a great spoon. Andrew has his favorite. If you're listening to this and you've listened to the podcast right now, I'm going to say, what's Andrew's favorite spoon? You're probably thinking
The Williams Wobbler.
And you're right. That's another great spoon. Another really good spoon that I know Andrew's brother was really a fan of, and I've caught some good fish on, was the Mep Cyclops.
I've got a bunch of those too.
Mep Cyclops. Yeah, they work fantastic. Really good for pike. But the one lure that I think everyone should own, and it's an old lure. One of these was in my grandpa's tackle box, and he didn't have a lot of lures. So that just goes to show something. And it's weedless, and it's been around for a long time, but I haven't seen a lot of people use it. So this could be a secret lure for you. It's the Johnson Silver Minnow.
We just told all 10s of our followers what to use.
All 6 people that listen to this podcast are going to buy one of these. Just kidding. But the cool thing about a Johnson Silver Minnow is, unlike a typical spoon that has, you know, a treble hook on the back or even a single hook on the back, the Johnson Silver Minnow has a welded single hook on the inside concave area of the hook, and then a welded on metal weed guard. Now, the cool thing about this is you can fish this pretty much anywhere. If you're fishing around weeds or timber or docks or humans, whatever, like you're not going to snag it. As an example, I took someone fishing that had very little fishing experience. We were fishing for pike, and we were fishing in an area that was fairly open water, but at the same time, there was big clumps of weeds every so often, and his casting accuracy was terrible. It was like picking weeds off. I had a chatterbait on it first, and it got to the point where I was like, you know what? We need something weedless for you. So we were fishing for pike. I put on the Johnson Silver Minnow. It casts like a bullet, just shoots out. I think it's like 3/4 of an ounce. It's a pretty easy lure to cast really far. It's got a big, super sharp weedless hook. You can add a grub on it too for extra action. And this thing wobbles and slithers through pretty much all but the thickest weeds and timber. I don't think he snagged it once. And we did catch some pike on it. And the cool thing about these is because it has the one single hook, it kind of rides upright. You can even fish these over the top of vegetation. Now, I know this is probably a classic, but I know Andrew and me have a lure that's similar to this that we've done very well. And why don't you talk about that?
So that one, I actually owned it and used it for quite a while before I ever owned my own Johnson Silver Minnow. Silver Minnow was, I believe, the first weedless spoon. But the one that I always grew up fishing was the Northland Jawbreaker. Now, we never called it that. We called it the Limberlegs because it sounded, you know, more fun. And the Limberlegs, the Northland Jawbreaker. So again, it's not welded, but it's got a hook that is kind of riveted onto the spoon with a weight on the bottom of it. So it rides kind of concave side down always. Great for skipping, by the way.
Very good.
and it has a rubber skirt on the back. That those are the Limberlegs, and that that little living rubber skirt in the back. So that when you reel it in, it has this amazing little like slithering action through the water. And again, you can fish it high, you can reel it in slower. It still has that action, and you can just kind of get it a bit deeper down into those weeds. But the one tip I'd say, no matter what spoon you're using, so the Limberlegs doesn't spin. Like you can kind of rip that thing in, and it just skims along the surface. Then same thing with the Johnson Silver Minnow. If you're reeling it too fast, it just kind of rides up and skims across the water surface. Some of the other spoons, though, like a Williams or like the Len Thompson, or the Sight, whatever other spoon you're going to use, because they don't have any internal, or not internal, but they don't have a weight system to kind of keep them upright or sitting the correct way. When you're reeling in a spoon, spoons aren't actually designed to spin. They aren't spinners. They're spoons. So if you are reeling it in, when it gets close to where you're standing, either on the boat or on shore, when it comes in, I have the, you just start reeling it in and you see it, you want it to wobble or sachet, as Jesse says.
Yeah.
If it's spinning as it comes in, you're reeling too fast. So get your right cadence, your speed for your reel. And then if it helps, you know, figure out what speed it is, kind of find a song that matches the beat and kind of maybe hum that to yourself as you're reeling, just to make sure that the entire time you're casting out, reeling in where you can't see it, you know that. Sometimes you can feel it. You'll get used to the thumping on your rod and you'll know that it is properly coming along as it should.
Yeah, for sure. Because as easy as it is just to do a straight retrieve, there is some, you know, things that you have to keep in mind, such as how fast you're reeling, because you don't want your spoon just to be spinning through the water, because not only will you get bad line twists, but also you'll catch way less fish. Fish don't really like that. Another great one, I know it's a few months off now, but short casting for salmon, even a beginner has a good chance of catching a giant salmon off a pier or river mouth in the fall. And it's all just by a very simple cast as far as you can, count it down, and slow retrieve, just get it wobbling. So it's a super easy and effective technique. So the next one that we're going to talk about is one of me and Andrew's favorite baits or lures. Now, if you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, you'll probably know that always are ranting and raving about how well this particular lure catches fish. Now, I'd like you to take a guess as to what that is. It starts with a C. It rhymes with yatter. It's a chatterbait. A chatterbait or a bladed jig. They're basically called bladed jigs. Chatterbait is a brand name.
Same thing like calling it a Senko. It's a stick bait. Senko is a brand.
Yeah. So we're just going to call them bladed jigs. So bladed jigs are absolutely fantastic. We catch tons of fish on them. We literally use them specifically for pike, bass. I've caught walleye on them, muskie. Andrew caught a big muskie the year before on a big chatterbait.
Yeah.
So and you've caught like bluegill on them, everything. Like they have really small ones and they have really big ones. We're going to talk a little bit about those and how and why they're so effective. But first, I'm going to show you some of Jacked Up Jigs. So again, the giveaway of Jacked Up Jigs, he's giving away $100. So if you see any of this stuff that we're talking about and you win the giveaway, pick up some of these because we highly recommend them. I bought a bunch of stuff off of Sheldon back at CanCast. We had very good success with it. We buy way too much stuff. Like I don't need all this stuff, but again, I like supporting local guys, but at the same time, I have a bit of an obsession with lures, as you can see. So I like buying a bunch of stuff. Again, I probably have like 40 chatterbaits or bladed jigs. Do I need more? No. Do I buy them? Yes. Will I use them? Maybe. We'll see. These are ones I definitely will use. So I want to show you some of the new colors that Sheldon has. Now, he has really, really good patterns on his bait. Really good patterns. Really good
skirt
colors.
Patterns and kind of very jig good head combinations. They're fantastic.
Yeah. The craftsmanship on these too. He has really nice eyes on them. The paint jobs are fantastic. This color here is called Baby Bass. Now, if you're listening to this, I'm going to describe this bladed jig for you. So it's got a big silver blade on the front. Sheldon has many different ones that have different color blades, also painted blades, which is cool. But this Baby Bass color, the top is green pumpkin. And then it's got kind of a translucent, clear, silvery color with green specks in it. And then silver on the bottom. So it literally looks like the side view of a little largemouth bass. Supernatural. Very cool pattern. I've used patterns like this, similar, that are called like, you know, green pumpkin shad or something like that, where it has a mixture of green pumpkin and kind of a shad color. This one actually has, you can see a lot of like green shimmeringness to it. This with a green pumpkin trailer, lights out, guaranteed for bass, any species. Really good quality hooks, really good quality components, and they're not that expensive. I know, like, you go to the store sometimes, you look at the chatterbaits and you're like, wow, these gone up in price. these are actually very reasonable. And the thing is, if you fish a lot of places where we do, where there's pike and muskie, oftentimes they get bit off. So it's really awesome to have such a good quality product that is a reasonable price. Because guess what? You're going to lose some, unfortunately. The big toothy critters are going to bite them off, unless you're using one of Andrew's just in case fluorocarbon leaders, shameless plug. So that's one I'm really excited for. And then the other one is this color. This is actually called Golden Shiner. Now, I have to either take the baby bass or the Golden Shiner, and Andrew gets the other one. So I'm really trying to hope he doesn't take the one that I want. So the Golden Shiner color, it's really cool. It actually has black eyeballs, which is very cool. It has a gold blade, gold, black, and white. Again, super high quality hook, super nice paint job. These like look, I know they're professionally made. These look super pro, like super pro, like super nice. Hooks are amazing. Now, we're going to kind of talk about chatterbaits. Andrew, tell me why you fish a chatterbait. Why? Why should someone fish a chatterbait?
Three things. First of all, they're super easy to do so. Super,
like super, super easy.
One of the easiest things to fish with. Second of all, they are amazing. They don't get hung up very easily, which I like.
Yep.
And the third thing that I really like about them is the vibration of them is obviously key. But they have flash and like tons of vibration. So eliciting that strike, like a reaction bait and just annoying to the fish, like it's lights out. It's perfect.
I became a believer. So I know you guys have probably heard this story if you listened to the podcast last year. Chatterbaits were just kind of getting more popular. I always kind of viewed them as kind of a gimmicky bait. I'm very skeptical when it comes to baits, especially baits that are like, you know, new and gimmicky.
Every new bait that comes out that's like different is gimmicky.
Exactly.
We view it as not gimmicky only when it proves itself. We're like, yeah, that actually makes sense.
Yeah. So I guess back in the day, not even that far, like chatterbaits pretty much came out to the mainstream fishing in like 15 years ago. But really the last 10 years, they became really like mainstream popular. And like now they're a household name. Like everyone that fishes for bass probably owns multiple bladed jigs. Guaranteed. Every company makes them. They catch fish. That's why. But back in the day when they first came out, I worked at the taco shop and I was like, these are stupid. Like, this is such a gimmick. And I didn't try one. I never bought one, which is weird because I'm a tackle junkie. I like buying all kinds of stuff. But for whatever reason, I was like against them. So we went up on a camping trip years ago, like many years ago. And Andrew bought one. It was like the chatterbait, the original chatterbait, the one that's like $7. It's probably like $5 back then. And he was fishing that. And I was fishing one of my favorites. We're going to cover after this, the swim jig, which is literally a bladed jig without a blade on it. That's literally the same thing. And he outfished me like 7-1 all day. Just like, boom, he had a fish on. Boom, he had a fish on. And I was like, what the heck? Like, how are you catching? Oh, I'm using that chatterbait. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. And he only had the one. So I literally couldn't even steal one off of him to compete. He destroyed me that day. And after that, I went to the store and I bought a whole bunch of them. And after that, I never looked back. I bought a bunch. I tried a bunch of different kinds. I saw what worked for me. And then we started using them for everything. We specifically use them for pike fishing,
mm-hmm.
bass, largemouth, and smallmouth. Again, muskie. I caught one of my biggest walleye on a chatterbait. Actually, I caught a really nice walleye last year up in Ottawa on a chatterbait. It's just, they catch literally everything. And like you said, you can cast them through everything. And except for the heaviest of cover, they come through.
And another thing that's amazing for the chatter or for any bladed jig, and some do it better than others. And I know I've used jacked up jigs, those specifically, and they have one of the best hunting action of any chatterbait or any bladed jig, I should say. And the hunting action, if you don't know what that is as it's coming through the water towards you, all of a sudden like dart off to the side and other side. And it's just completely random, but it's not retrieving in a perfectly straight line. It kind of just shuffles around in the water. When you can get a bait that is a cast and retrieve that is already imparting its own action erratically, that you don't have to do anything special to get to achieve, that is something that's why we love it so much for introducing people to fishing or when they don't have a lot of experience. Like, put this on, cast it, because there's no special technique to it. So it's really good. You have full use of it right away, even as a beginning angler.
Yeah. Like obviously there's some techniques and special things you can do to catch more fish on chatterbaits, like ripping it through weeds and doing stuff like that, or, fluttering them down and then pull pausing them, or even pitching them around docks like a jig. That's a tip. But yeah, it has a hunting action, which basically causes the bait to just be so erratic without the angler doing anything. You just cast it and reel it.
I'm sure you'd agree, Jesse, despite having those other techniques, which yes, they are useful too, but most of my fish, by far majority of them on a chatterbait is just cast and retrieve.
That just shows you how effective it is for such a simple bait. So like we mentioned, you can catch all kinds of species on them. We highly, highly recommend them. They're great for bass. Like, you need them for bass. I don't care where you live. If there's bass in your lake, get a bladed jig. Pick up some of Jacked Up Jigs models. They're amazing. So we're going to talk about swim jigs because chatterbaits are great. They're great around, I'd say, like moderate to open water. But once you get past that slightly thicker weeds where your chatterbait doesn't have a weed guard on them or anything, some of them do, but most of them don't, you're going to want to switch to a swim jig. And the reason for that is because swim jigs are weedless. They're actually very weedless. In fact, you can actually fish them over top of thick vegetation, like skittering them across the top of lily pads, which is some technique that a lot of people don't do. Jacked Up Jigs, the first thing I ever bought from him was a swim jig. He had a color, it's like green pumpkin with a chartreuse bottom. And I was like, oh, I love that color. Like, I love green pumpkin because it's such a natural bassy color. It just looks like everything. But that little bit of chartreuse underneath in the belly just made it pop out. And I'm thinking, if I'm fishing around weeds that are the same color as the green pumpkin jig, I don't want it to completely blend in. I want it to blend in because I want it to look natural. But I also want there to be just a little flash of a different color. So I bought a bunch of those, but he has a ton of other colors. And here is one that I'm going to be using real soon for pike. White swim jig. You cannot go wrong for pike with a white swim jig. He uses really good high quality hooks. The thing that I like about his swim jigs,
his weed guards are top notch.
They're top notch. They're just the perfect amount of softness.
Yeah.
Oftentimes you'll get a swim jig, either the weed guard is way too stiff or they're way too soft. These are perfect. I'd say they're pretty soft, but not soft enough that you're going to be snagging on things. Mm-hmm. The cool thing is with this swim jig is the eye. Now I'm a bit of a tackle snob when it comes to swim jigs because there's so many on the market. I'm a huge fan of his swim jigs because the eye comes out almost straight.
Yes.
For me, that means one thing. It means it's going to come through weeds really well. Sometimes the eye comes up at an angle, like at a 60 degree angle or something like that. And I just find that where the line ties on, as you're reeling through weeds, it kind of like collects weeds onto the line and they're not as weedless. Really a big fan of these. He has a really nice high quality eyes in there, which I know some people really think that makes a difference. I do to a certain extent too. And his skirts, again, like the same on his bladed jigs, top-notch colors. The white one, nothing fancy about white, but he does a good job on it. White is just one of those colors that you need. Now, when it comes to swim jigs, can fish it pretty much. I know there's tons of different techniques, but you can fish it on a straight retrieve. And it is a good bait, in my opinion, for someone that's just getting into the sport too, because you can cast it almost anywhere, beside lily pads, beside a dock, through weeds, on a weed line. You can fish it anywhere. And then it is a swim jig, but you can pitch it. You can flip it. Don't forget, like when you're fishing a swim jig, if you're casting along the shoreline and you see a nice juicy log, flip it. It's still a jig. Just because it swims better than a flipping jig, you can still swim it. Just like how you can swim a flipping jig, you can flip a swim jig. I just blew my mind.
Another thing too, if you want to keep, you know, flipping is another like whole other technique, but if you want to get into just a regular cast retrieve bait, something cool you can do with a swim jig, because they are so weedless and they slide through basically anything, unless you're fishing a kind of a boulder bottom where it's got like big crevices, if you use just a heavier weight or you're fishing in shallower water, you can just scuttle them along the bottom. So reel in a bit slower, let it sink right to the bottom, and then just reel in and it just like is scuttling along the bottom. And again, that's like a whole other presentation, but you don't have to do anything special. And it just is knocking off little rocks and weeds and it's moving around on the bottom and you're just slowly reeling it in. So that's another amazing technique or great technique to do that is a bit more specialized or niche, but is just as easy because you're just cast, let it sink, retrieve.
Yep. And like Andrew said, it's a versatile bait. I've caught almost everything on swim jigs. I fish them a lot. I really like swim jigs, I'm not going to lie. But largemouth, smallmouth, I can't even tell you how many muskie have bit me off while I'm bass fishing on swim jigs. I've never caught a muskie on a swim jig that hasn't bit me off, but it's happened to me multiple times a year for probably the last like 10 years. You'll be fishing along a weed line and ching.
I'll tell you a secret about Jesse's fishing. He will be using a chatterbait, and then if we're not catching anything, next option, he puts on a swim jig.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, like we talked about before, you know, sometimes with bladed jigs, they have a very strong vibration. So sometimes it's just helpful to have a little bit more of a subtle presentation where it has the same you know, size bodies. It's not a finesse. It's not anything else. It's just not as aggressive in its vibration. So for that instance, some days, especially like calmer days, using the swim jig as opposed to a bladed jig is a fantastic option, but you're keeping your exact same colors that you want to use. You're keeping the same technique you want to do. Just one has a blade, one doesn't.
Yeah. And that's a great point, because a chatterbait is a great bait, but if you're out there, say you're bass fishing and it's slick, calm, swim jig.
Yeah.
You want subtlety. You don't want something that's just like a huge vibration and chattering, because like realistically, that's not very natural. Like it will attract fish, but sometimes when the water's slick, calm, and the fish just get a little more finicky, swim jig is the key. It's just slightly subtle. Now, if you're fishing a swim jig for any kind of fish, let's just say bass, pike, walleye, caught pretty good walleye on swim jigs too. Andrew caught one last year on a swim jig. The classic paddle tail is the trailer you use for it. I'm a big fan of a big, meaty, some thick, nice paddle tail to put on the back that'll really cause the swim jig to have some action too. If you put on some of the paddle tails with the thinner tails and the tail just kind of kicks behind the swim jig, that's all it does. But if you find a nice, thick, harder density plastic swim bait, one of my favorite ones is the Storm Largo Shad. These are really hard kicking, slightly denser plastic. They really get the swim jig rolling if you're just going to do a straight retrieve. And again, super easy bait to fish and pretty much weedless. I've caught them in very, very thick weeds on these things as well. So definitely check those out. And again, Sheldon has tons of cool patterns. What's the next lure, Andrew?
Next one is, it's a classic. It's the Rapala Countdown. Now, the Countdown is, I believe, one of the first Rapala lures. Not the first. The original is the original Rapala. I think they next had the Sinking Rapala, like original Sinking. And then I believe one of the next ones, I believe, don't quote me on this, people, was the Countdown. And it's been around almost as long as the company has, but it has proven itself to be used, you know, in various sizes from stream trout to king salmon. Like these things are used for anything in between. And they are another great option, because talk about versatility as a little crankbait. It's fantastic. You can also use them as a little jerkbait. You can do whatever you want with them as you retrieve, but they have an excellent little wiggle as they come in. And one of the best things about them is, as their name implies, you can count them down. So every second is approximately 1 foot, no matter what size it is, no matter what color it is, it's approximately 1 foot per second as they sink. So again, if you're trying to fish someone or with someone who's inexperienced, or if you yourself are inexperienced, we'll recommend like, hey, we're in 7 feet of water. So cast out, count 5 seconds. Now you're 5 feet deep, start reeling in. You shouldn't be getting snags. They're going to be coming along, and it kind of stays at that depth until, you know, a few feet away. Then it starts to come up as you obviously get back to your rod. It has to get there sometime. But it does a really good job at staying at that desired depth for the majority of that retrieve.
Yeah, such a versatile lure. And I think it's one of those lures that everyone knows about it. And I know a lot of people use it, but I feel like it's one of those lures that people will be like, if they're getting into the sport, I don't feel it's like one of the first choices that they get. But it's such a versatile lure. It's like you said, you can count it down. You can fish you could fish 90 feet of water with the thing. It'll sink slowly down to 90 feet, or you can fish it 2 feet under the surface. And it's just the perfect minnow profile. Again, it comes in a bunch of different sizes. They now have this one called the Countdown Elite, which has a lot nicer hooks on it, some cooler patterns. But even the original is just, it's perfect. It comes in sizes like from like 1.25 inches all the way up to like 4 inches or something. So there's a size to fit what you need. And they just flat out catch fish. I've caught some of my most memorable fish when I was younger. I used to fish this marina growing up. And there was a lot of shallow areas, but there was a big deep area. So I bought a bunch of Countdowns. And I would just cast them out and I'd count them down. I'd count down maybe 5 feet, make 10 casts. Nothing. Okay, I'd count down 8 feet. And I'd just keep going deeper until I connected with fish. And I'd pick up anything on those. I'd catch smallmouth on them, sheephead. I caught a pretty nice brown trout one time on them. I've also caught pike on them. They catch anything. It's a minnow imitator. It's going to catch anything. So that's another bait that I'd highly recommend anyone get, because it's such a versatile bait. I don't think we've talked about the Countdown on this podcast before, but it's a lure that has been a staple for me over the years.
And I do like the larger sizes too, which I always, for a long time, I have just the small ones. I was using them for trout, maybe some like small bass and whatnot, like smallmouth or something. I have a couple larger ones now, which I'm excited to use for you know, pike fishing, you know, other, even if not fishing deep water, but having that consistent depth as I retrieve against like weed lines and stuff like that. I'm excited to try that this year because I got a couple of, I think one or two of the 3-inch ones. And it's just, again, it's 3 inches doesn't sound like a whole lot, but again, it's upsized from kind of the regular or what you might be used to seeing in stores. And I know some of the larger ones can be harder to find, but if you get the chance, they, again, the big ones, they sink at 1 foot a second. So they're just as easy to use.
And the cool thing I just added is one last thing about the countdown is it doesn't have a massive erratic wobble to it. Mm-hmm. It's almost like it's just a super subtle shimmy, which sometimes I think a lot of the baits, like we think like crankbaits and stuff, they just have this big erratic wobble. It's like, yes, that works sometimes, but sometimes, especially when the fish are pressured, just a very natural shimmy of a natural fish swimming through the water. Still a bit off. Like it seems like it's an injured bait fish still, but it's not swimming erratically around like crazy. Sometimes that can be the deal. So definitely pick up some of those in your tackle box for this season. And again, they work for everything. Highly recommend them for bass, for trout, for walleye, anything like that. So the next bait and the final bait we're going to talk about is such a wide range. That's why I left it to the end because it's everything. So again, what have we covered so far? Spinners and spoons, bladed jigs, countdown rapalas, swim jigs, and now one of the easiest baits to fish, in my opinion, and it works for everything, all the way from musky to like sunfish. It's perfect. And no, it's not a dewworm on a hook. It would be a swim bait. I'm sure all of us have some of these boot tail swim baits with just a jig head on it. This is a Storm GT360. Yeah, that's one of my favorites. Like they sell these in a pack at the store and it's like one jig head with three bodies and it's like $10 or something like that. They're just, it's a great thing. You could just grab and go. I remember when I worked at the fishing store, people would be like, oh, I'm, you know, buying a bunch of lures for bass or for pike. I'd always be like, okay, grab a pack of those Storm 360s. They just work great. The plastic's super durable. They've got a nice wobble to them and the heads actually have a rattle in it too. So they're pretty cool bait. They come in a lot of different sizes, but one of these baits, a swim bait, it's so easy to use. You literally can cast it out and just reel it straight back in. And it literally looks just like a minnow swimming and everything eats it. Everything. I've caught bass on these, pike, walleye, everything. I know on smaller swim baits, me and Andrew have been fishing. Andrew's caught like the tiniest sunfish of all time on one of them. It just attacked it. So I highly recommend.
Micro. There's like microplastics now. If you really wanted to go like, I want finesse and you're using really light gear and you're going for, like I said, stream trout, you're going for sunfish, you're going for any form of panfish, you can get these things and they're like 1 inch, 1 1/4 inch long, little tiny little paddle tails nowadays. And you can put them on a, you know, 16th ounce jig head or 8th ounce jig head, cast out and retrieve. And another great option that I really like is sometimes you can find jig heads that have weed guards on them. Or, pro tip, if any of your skirts rip off any old jigs that have a weed guard on it, you can just use that. And as long as it's not super heavy weight, but you can use those and it now has a weedless hook. Don't throw it out because there's no skirt on it. And you just rig a paddle tail on that. And again, you can slink that through some really, you know, tough weeds sometimes, depending on the, again, mainly where the eye connects, like you're mentioning to the jig head. But some of them, they're designed, they're got weed guards on them. And I had a couple and I don't remember the name brand of it. I got them years ago. I don't know if I can still find them in stores even, but I think I have one left. And it was perfect. We were slamming crappie on them and stuff like that. And it was just perfect to put these little paddle tails on. And we were just wiggling them through the weeds in the fall. And it was perfect because it wasn't a huge presentation, a huge profile, but it was nice and weedless to pull it through.
And if things get pretty weedy, so like right here, we were talking about like an exposed single hook swim bait jig head. But we mentioned this last week about the spring pike, but if things get weedy, one of the best ways is to fish a weedless swim bait. This here is it's a Texas rig. This is a flashy swimmer with a beast hook, or maybe it's just a flashy swimmer. But anyway, it's got some weight under here. There's a blade. This is a pretty big 6-inch plastic. This is something I'd use for northern pike or even musky, finesse musky. But something like this, even without the blade, you can fish that through the thickest of cover. You can even fish it on top of like lily pads and stuff to pull it through. But if you have any kind of like weeds, you know, say there's a bunch of milfoil or some clumps of other, you know, crap that's in the water and you don't want to fish a single hook jig head and just get weeds on it all the time, use a weedless one. The only tip that I would give you though is when you're fishing a weedless one, you do have to use slightly sturdier gear. A swim bait with an exposed hook, you can get away with lighter gear. even a spinning rod, because the hook is generally pretty thin and it's wide open, exposed. Fish grabs it, the hook goes right in their mouth, no problem. But when you're using one of these weedless swim bait Texas rig hooks, and it's in the plastic, you have to set the hook hard enough to get that hook to push out of the plastic and into the fish's mouth. And these Texas rig hooks, they're a bit thicker. So if you're using one, depending on the size, they come in all different sizes. They have weedless hooks for, 3-inch swim baits, as well as 6-inch ones like this. So make sure you're just using the proper heavy gear that you need to actually get the hook into the fish's mouth. Mm-hmm. So one last one that I want to talk about, because this is probably one of my favorite swim baits, is the Water Wolf Lure Shadzilla Jr. Now, yeah. If you don't fish muskie or pike, this probably looks like a huge lure to you. It's 7.5 inches long. I think they're 2.5 ounces, something like that, maybe 3 ounces. It's got a pretty big hook on the top and then a treble hook on the bottom. This is just a big hollow body. It's hollow in the middle. It's a big hollow body swim bait. And this is a great bait. I've caught, there's a whole bunch of pike teeth marks all over.
I wish you could see this bait in person, because I've held it in my hand a few times. Jesse's had, I think that's one of the first ones you ever bought.
Yeah.
The thing is more glue than bait almost.
I've glued it together probably 5 times.
And that's from big pike, oh, here's a nick. I mean, the left side was completely wide open. Well, let's glue that shut.
Yeah. And they're very reasonably priced. I actually just picked up a pack at East Hill Outdoors the other day. Two of these big swim baits for 30 mm-hmm. bucks. Now, if you go to any store and you're looking at musky swim baits, big plastic ones like this, they're usually 30 bucks each.
Yeah.
These are made in Ontario by Mike from Water Wolf Lures. These are 2 for $30, and they are fish catching machines. They catch everything. I've heard guys catch massive walleye on these. I could definitely see catching massive walleye and big bass. But
if you're going for trophy walleye or large ones, that's an amazing option.
This is a mouthful.
Guys are using 7-inch baits for that, and that's a great option for it.
And these are generally very popular with pike and muskie guys. So if you're someone that has been fishing mag drafts, the Megabass mag draft, this fish is a lot deeper and a lot faster, and it's much less expensive. So if you haven't tried these already, definitely try them out. And like I said, they're made in Ontario, but for when I fish with these with pike, constant steady retrieve. That's it. Cast them out, let them sink a bit. They actually fish pretty deep if you let them go down, and then you just reel them in. That tail just kicks back and forth.
It kicks.
Super easy bait to use. We actually have one left. It's a secret.
Oh, see, Jesse always does this. He always has secrets for me, and I don't get to, especially now that because we're recording, virtually together, I never get to see what's on his table in front of him. Whereas at least in person, I'd kind of know at the beginning of the podcast, he'd pull his, a tackle tray out and slam his hands on the table and scare me about getting hooked in the hand 50 times. So I'd know what he's going to talk about. I don't. So we're all going to learn and get excited about this together, people.
Well, as the producer of the show, I get to throw those curveballs at you. So now this is a new...
And as the jokester, I'm going to crack some real wisecracks about it, probably.
It better be good. This is a new product from Jacked Up Jigs, which is, if you haven't been listening this whole time, and you should have, he is the podcast episode 50 giveaway partner, who's giving away $100, which is pretty awesome. Oh, he has come out with something that I actually really am going to buy a bunch of them. he gave me a pack to show off on the podcast, and I'm like, I got to buy more of these. This is just one of those things that in Ontario for walleye, smallmouth, largemouth, especially those smallmouth and walleye, this is going to kill. This is.
I'm excited. Yeah.
What do you think it is?
Well, I assume it's, is it a new form of bladed jig? Like a smaller
jig? It is a jig. It's a jig head. Now this is cool. What has been the trend in bass fishing the last few years? Finesse is killing it, especially for smallmouth. So he has come out with the Jacked Up Jigs Finesse Swimbait Head. Now I'm going to show you this just on the camera quick. I'll post some more pictures on our social media. This just came out. These are absolutely beautiful. I'm going to describe them for you. They're finesse jig heads. They almost look like a guppy head. Like it's a guppy head, which are popular now. Like a lot of the guys are winning the tournaments fishing like a finesse head with a little jerk shad or a fluke or something on the back. This has kind of a longer shank. It's a finesse hook, but it's strong, super sharp, very sharp. It's a bit of a longer shank, which I like. I don't like the ones that are really short. And it actually has the built-in screw keeper for the bait. So once you put the swim bait on, you can actually twist it onto the hook and it'll hold it on. No super glue needed. It's got two super big realistic eyes, and a really good paint job. The one that I have here is Green Pumpkin. And actually what I have it hooked on here, this is a paddle tail from Wham Baits. That little combo there is going to absolutely slay for smallmouth and other things, but smallmouth especially. The hook, I think the best thing about this, like I'm just looking at this hook. Ah, like it's sharp. It's a nice hook. So he has three different sizes that he has coming out and a bunch of different colors. And definitely he's going to be at CanCast. So make sure you check him out. Check out these baits. This is one of those baits that, you know, it's one of those baits you can just chuck out, reel it in, and you're going to catch fish. Or you can get bougie with it and try some different stuff. Now, I looked up the information about this particular head. Now, I want to describe why. I was like, oh, these are new baits. You should buy them. But I'm going to tell you why this particular jake head is pretty cool. So it has a 90 degree line tie. So the eye of the hook is pointing straight up. Now, what does that cause? So basically, there's a 90 degree line tie, and it basically allows the soft plastic, like swim bait, for instance, like this one, to destabilize during the retrieve, which encourages a natural head wagging motion. You ever thought of that? That's pretty cool. So as you're reeling this in, yeah, the line tie is going to literally pull it down like this and cause it to have an erratic motion.
Yeah. And also because you're not pulling directly from the nose of the bait, as it, the head will kind of pivot side to side because the pivot point is where it connects. So because most of that jig head is in front of that eye, yeah, it's gonna move as the back end starts kicking around. Now, I just want to say, for those who are watching on YouTube, you get to see what Jesse is doing. But for those in the audio, I told Jesse he has to hold his hand up behind the bait in order to show, because then you can see what it is. I don't know if he realizes this, but that's what the makeup tutorialists do on YouTube. It's like, oh, look at this eyeshadow palette of Jesse showing off this cool jig. Look at this jig, guys, holding in front of his.
Yep.
Showing off the fine details of it.
So this one here on this little swim bait, that's a quarter ounce. He also has 3/8, and I think he's coming out with a slightly smaller one too. So I'm excited for those.
I'm absolutely going to be buying some of those because I love finesse jigs. I love them. Finesse presentations in general. But those are going to be sick to be using on like kind of the Americanized BFS style stuff. Oh, I'm excited
excited for these because this is one of those baits. It's like, you need it.
And I tell you why I'm super excited about those is because I know that he puts, again, good quality materials in it. So I have full confidence in that hook because I know a lot of the times you get finesse jigs. And yes, that is a nice small wire hook, but it's a strong hook.
It's not something that, again, you're going to be using this probably on spinning gear. This isn't something.
I'm not tying it onto 40-pound braid.
This isn't something that you're going to, you know, be flipping around rocks and stuff, but this has a very sharp hook. If you're using a spinning rod on this, if you had a fish grab, you could just pull back and reel and the thing would be hooked. It's super sharp. And again, very strong, like Andrew said. So we're excited about those. Those are absolutely fantastic. If you're going to CanCast, make sure you stop by Sheldon's booth. Last year, we met him, his wife, and his two kids were there. Whole family was there. It was fantastic to see them. And this year, he has a bunch of new stuff like this. Definitely check it out. If you don't get some of those finesse heads, I would recommend you do. But if you don't, get extra bladed jigs because these are pretty sick. I'm going to get a few. I don't need them, but I'm going to get them. So anyway, that is the episode for today. I hope you guys enjoyed some of these baits that, you know, they're pretty easy to fish. They're just pretty much cast and retrieve for a lot of them, but they slam fish. And some of these baits, maybe you've never used before, like the Countdown Rapala. So definitely check that out. I'm not, you know, encouraging you to spend all your money on new baits that you probably won't use, but hey, that's kind of what we do here. So before we end this episode, like we said before, Jacked Up Jigs, $100 giveaway. That's insane. You can only win if you're a Patreon member. So we would like to thank our Patreon members at this point for supporting the show. It's really a huge weight off me and Andrew's shoulders, having you guys and girls donate a few bucks every month to help us cover some of the show costs. If you would like to do that yourself and you haven't already, we would really appreciate it. It just helps us, you know, cover the costs that we're not paying out of our own pocket. But as well, you get a warm, fuzzy feeling, like Andrew says, but you also get entered into all the giveaways. And this month of March, as you notice already so far, there has been a giveaway every weekend. And here's a tip. There's another giveaway next weekend, which is pretty cool too. So you get entered into all the giveaways and the odds are pretty good. The odds are pretty good. Like when we're doing the draws on Patreon, you have a pretty good chance of winning right now. So get in while it's early because some of the giveaways coming up are going to be pretty insane, just like this one. So before we end this episode, we have Andrew who's going to tell us the quote of the week.
sometimes the smartest thing you can do is use a stupid bait.
You idiot.